Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Okay, I spent probably about half an hour of my day following the cover story of Megan Fox and her new cover on with Glamour magazine, and the 15-minute interview, she talks about everything from parenting, the engagement with Machine Gun Kelly, her spiritual ritualistic experiences. Can I just say it's creepy? It is creepy. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. She talks about everything from feminism, being Me Too before the Me Too movement even occurred. She says a lot of really great things, the truth about what's happening in Hollywood, good things, some good things about mental health. But at the same time, ultimately, she's dragging people down a path that is oriented toward not just a form of spiritualism, but what we could even refer to as Satanism. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later here on Trending. Joining me in just a little bit will be licensed marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo. He's at the forefront of confronting the crisis today of sexuality. And we are going to discuss, how do you help young people? And this is really important. Listen up. How do you help young people feel comfortable and accepting of the body they have and the biological sex that they are? Because this is at the crisis of the culture. Many people who are suddenly identifying as transgender, who are experiencing what's known clinically as gender dysphoria, sometimes it's starting really young. Sometimes it's all of a sudden setting in the 20s. What's happening? What is this, really a gender crisis? Or is there something much deeper going on, having to do with comfort and acceptance of our body, loving ourselves, and accepting and respecting sexual differences and embracing our biological reality and complementarity? We're going to talk about that, but we're taking your questions. I know this is a complicated topic that you, along with many others, have questions on. So if you have a question surrounding the LGBTQ ideology crisis and circumstances you're experiencing, licensed marriage and family therapist will be with me in just a moment, Michael Gasparo. He's the forefront of confronting these issues, counseling and helping people who are suffering and struggling with this. And we're giving a distinctly Catholic take. So taking your questions, the number's 1-888-914-9149. Also, you can go over to my Instagram story now at Timory. Follow me at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And you can actually ask your question now. Perhaps you don't want to call, but would like to have your question heard. We are taking questions. We already have some coming in. I'm also going to dive into how motherhood inspires creative work, and Elon Musk taking over Twitter, buying it out. What are your thoughts? We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Stay with me. The number's 1-888-914-9149. Michael, welcome back to Trending.
Well, thank you, Timory. Happy to be here.
You are working at the forefront of this crisis surrounding gender, and I had a recent question and story come in from a school teacher talking about a second grade student. She is question for your guest who talks who experience same-sex attraction, get rid of it because they want to live according to their conscience. She said, I work in a public school with students with special needs, and I have new students who qualified for this service. He loves and exclusively chooses overtly feminine pink sequin pencil pouches, My Little Pony books, Hello Kitty, princesses, etc. And more recently, he's drawn a picture of himself as a girl with a pink dress, long hair, and all. One of the other teachers is asking me if we should have him start counseling, and I'm telling her to hold off. He's still figuring out who he is in the second grade, and we shouldn't impress anything on him just yet. Already he's being teased regularly and getting into fights with peers, and there's some family issue at home, especially with the dad. Other teachers are also reading more inclusive books and classes to give exposure, thinking this will support him. And she's wondering, and she's working on teaching him strategies herself on how to cope and handle negative peer pressure. She said, my question is this, and Michael, I think this is so important. This is a school teacher in California reaching out. She works with children who qualify for special needs. And this little boy in second grade has recently come into her classroom. So my question is, I'm wondering if there's more you can do for young kids to help them feel comfortable and accepting of the body they're born in. She said, how do I support this kid and protect him from people trying to steer him indirectly toward a potential trans or homosexual lifestyle? Michael, I know there's so much to unpack here, but let's start with the whole idea of helping kids feel comfortable with accepting their body and their biological sex.
I think the first thing to keep in mind when I hear that, Timri, is that the majority of children do automatically accept their biological sex and their gender as such. So this is still a very small percentage, a very, very small minority of children that are struggling with this kind of dysphoria. And now you might think, why is he saying that? We're talking about how it's growing and the problem is becoming bigger. Yes. But I also don't want us to miss the forest for the trees, meaning sometimes the level at which it's talked about is actually encouraging people to have misconceptions about the pervasiveness or lack thereof of this issue. So this is a big problem, but for the reasons that I'm about to highlight, we shouldn't be reading these books to all children, because by default, most children don't even wonder about this. When an issue comes up like this, specifically for a child who's demonstrating gender incongruent behavior, the first thing to ask as a therapist is, what is the relationship like with this child and his parents? And in that question, I remember reading there was something about, in our conversations before the show today, Timri, this child has some issues with his parents, especially his father, relationship with his dad. Is that right, Timri?
Right, going on at home, especially with the dad.
Yeah. So there are some clearly masculine and feminine identified stereotypes that exist even at that age. What we don't want to do as Catholics is put people into a small box and say, all little boys have to like dump trucks and race cars, and all little girls need to like My Little Pony and sequin pencil bags like this boy is liking. But what we also don't want to do is pretend that it's only coincidence that he is only interested or predominantly interested in female identified interests. So I would want to know and understand a little bit better, what are his relationships like with women? For instance, do women represent acceptance, kindness, love? Meanwhile, you've referenced that this boy is being bullied by his peers that are boys. So one thing to start with is not trying to change a child's interests, but to look at the relational patterns in this child's life within his same-sex peer group, and find ways as a teacher that you can encourage and facilitate as best you can same-sex peer experiences that highlight acceptance, approval, affirmation. And there are even programs that schools have with older buddies, cross age groups, you know, fifth grader playing with the second grader in school, reading to each other. So those are the kinds of things I would want to explore first before actually trying to address the interests that are incongruent with his most boys' his age.
This is an excellent starting point, incorporating male affirmative relationships, especially when there's a clear identifier of a fatherly relationship being damaged. I want to come back on this note, Michael. That's licensed marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo. We're taking your questions, numbers 1-888-914-9149, confronting the gender crisis that you may be experiencing within your family with loved ones. Happy to take your question with a Catholic take. Feel free to ask your question live now on Instagram. I put a question box up. That's at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. We'll be right back taking your questions.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, I followed the story of Megyn Kelly with her new cover on Glamour UK magazine. And if you haven't heard any of the interviews yet, it is creepy. But at the same time, she's speaking a lot of truth when it comes to the sexist dimension of Hollywood, especially surrounding women and staying healthy, you're not drinking, not doing drugs. But there's a lot of creepiness to what she's saying as well, especially with relation to her relationship with Machine Gun Kelly. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit, but joining me now to confront your questions in the gender crisis we're experiencing in the culture is associate marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo. We're answering the question, how do you help young people feel comfortable and accepting of the body they have and the biological sex they are? Michael Gasparo is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He works at the forefront of this issue, helping people who are struggling with same-sex attraction and gender dysphoria. And we're giving a Catholic take on the crisis experienced right now. A question came in from a school teacher having to do with a second grader who's struggling with gender dysphoria and who the other school teachers are trying to encourage him into a transgender identity. And she's saying, hold on, you know, let's try not to impress anything upon him. And Michael, you were just sharing how important it is to understand in this particular circumstance in particular, it's already been identified that this little boy has a little bit of a strained relationship with his parents, especially the father. And you're speaking to how important when there's gender dysphoria, especially for a little boy, that little boys need positive same-sex peer relationships, and that this helps when there's gender confusion. Can you share a little bit more about this?
Most of the time when young people have negative peer experiences from the same-sex peer group, as well as a strained relationship with a same-sex parent, it's often a chicken or the egg or both scenario. So for instance, if a young boy doesn't feel adequately supported, encouraged, affirmed by his same-sex parent, he might be vulnerable to the type of bullying that people who are insecure themselves or perhaps view themselves as higher up in the social hierarchy will prey upon. So I'm not sure which one caused the other, but in this case, likely his father and the relationship or lack thereof with his father made him more vulnerable to these reinforcing negative peer experiences. So what we can do is we can't say that peer experiences are going to correct everything that's wrong with his father, but if you're in a school environment, you may have more access to peer support than you do parental support. Although if a teacher can pull in both, Timory, all the better. Let's keep everyone involved. This is a systemic problem. And it's not that we're telling this little boy again, you can't like these quote unquote girly things. We're looking deeper. What are your relationships like, and how can soothing and affirming this boy's gender insecurities naturally help him to acquiesce to likely a more balanced set of interests? These are often hyper-feminized interests that not even, we would say, are almost stereotypes of feminine interests at times with young boys, even gender-neutral interests. A lot of times these young boys, Timory, have heightened interest in mermaids or perceived gender neutral figures. So it's not that we're trying to take away anyone's feelings or desires towards, let's say, innocent things like a purse versus a rocket ship toy. But we're really trying to heal relationships and help little boys feel really good about being a little boy and feeling like they belong with other little boys. And same thing for young girls. And frankly, the reason that a lot of young girls are coming more and more with gender dysphoria could be explained through a variety of social and environmental factors. It's clearly not exclusively biological, given the extreme increase over the last few years in gender dysphoric young female cases.
This is a really important point that you just shared. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. That's licensed marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo. You just emphasize this trend toward more children identifying as transgender. Clearly, this isn't something that's happening biologically. This isn't something that is normal. It's an odd and unique trend. And it's fascinating, Michael, because I was just even looking at research earlier today and following this plastic surgeon. I believe she's out of Miami. She has millions of followers and she's very well connected. And she and her staff knowingly go on to TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube and facilitate and recruit minors, teenagers, and kids to have sex change surgeries, top surgery, bottom surgery. And I mean, this is literally part of what this woman does. And she posts all about it on social media. And so I'm sharing this because there are literally trolls. And I hate that word sometimes because it's thrown around so casually when someone doesn't like someone else on social media. But these are perverted, troll, manipulative adults who are looking to make a gain and force their agenda on children. So I connect that because you're mentioning this sudden uptick in gender dysphoric cases. Well, that's part of the reason why we're seeing this as a trend on Pinterest, that kids are being recruited through Pinterest use as well into a gender dysphoric ideology and identity, according to them. And so resources are so important. How, Michael, do we help kids in having a greater sense of comfort and confidence in their own bodies? Because I think that this is part of that challenge today, is that that normal development into with puberty and discovering your sexuality, it's so difficult with social media and the objectification of our bodies. What can we do to help ease that discomfort that at times people are recruiting people into this gender dysphoric ideology when in reality it's just natural discomfort as you get a little older?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an interesting point about these women on social media. And I'd like to say that I don't think many people perceive themselves as the villain in their story. So these people who are trolling young people, they probably have convinced themselves they're doing something really good and supportive. But we don't have to basically abate or give in to that kind of nonsense. Len Ecker-Quarterly, I just mispronounced it, sorry, but it's the Catholic Medical Association's journal. They published an article in 2020 called Deficiencies in Scientific Evidence for Medical Management of Gender Dysphoria by Dr. Paul Ruse. And this paper does an excellent job of analyzing medical data available for these type of medical interventions on young people. And as a Catholic, I want to encourage your listeners not to scapegoat people who are being irresponsible and harmful to children by pushing these ideas, but to push back against them with truth. We are a people of the scientific method. It is perfectly in line with our Catholic teaching to review evidence-based treatments, and the science is in, guys. These types of interventions do not reduce suicides. They do not solve the problem of depression and anxiety among gender dysphoria in children. They don't even resolve gender dysphoria a lot of the time. And in fact, gender dysphoria will most of the time resolve on its own without interventions, medical or psychotherapeutic or otherwise. So this is truth. We need to stand by this truth. We need to be confident in it and protect children from this kind of nonsense. In terms of how we can proactively also help children accept their bodies, it's ironic, but I think it's simple, and purposefully I'm going to say it very simply. Teach them that their bodies are good and that their bodies matter. And this is a thing. So often we're hearing, Timory, today, oh, well, your body doesn't really matter. What matters are your feelings. False. Your body does matter, and it was created for good, and it is good in itself. And attuning children to the goodness and the importance of their body is actually part of our faith. We believe in the resurrection of the body and the life of the world to come, not just some sort of formless, empty continuation of energy into eternity. So our faith anchors us in the reality of the body, that the body matters, that we are body and soul. And through that faith, Timory, and through our emphasis on the goodness of who God created us as body and soul, I think we can simply and confidently provide a basis for healthy, normal, integrated sense of self regarding sex and gender.
Excellent. I think this is very helpful with body affirmation, body positivity. This is what young girls, young boys need in a socialized, objectified, and sexualized, and digitized culture, because that's what's happening. Everything's fake. Everything's manipulatable. And it's hurting how we age and work through puberty, it's hurting how adults work through various seasons of their own lives. You know, mature women, mature men, especially women transitioning into, you know, older parts of their life where their bodies are changing. You know, this social influence, it's not just impacting kids. Adults might choose plastic surgery, but kids are choosing irreversible sexual plastic surgery that manipulates body parts. Mm-hmm. And this is how profoundly deep this is touching on the mind, body, heart, soul of these kids. How can we affirm specifically the sexual identity? So we talked about affirming the body, but the sexual identity of an individual, even if your kid doesn't struggle with same-sex attraction or gender dysphoria.
Sexual identity is an interesting concept in itself to me, Timri, because it's really just a set of feelings, desires, and experiences, and it doesn't really tell us who we are. It just tells us a little bit about ourselves and about our experiences, but it doesn't tell us the deepest part of who we are. So I think we should actually get away from even this term sexual identity. You know, what's your identity? How do you identify sexually? I think that's kind of silly, because a lot of people have desires and feelings and interests sexually that are either A, illegal, B, irresponsible, C, unfeasible, the list goes on. So if anything like that, which feelings come and go, are transient, aren't very stable, that should not be the basis for our core identity. In fact, our core identity, as we know as Catholics, is rooted in our intrinsic openness and receptivity to the love of God as adopted, beloved children of the Father. And one thing I love, and I know Dr. Greg Botero has been on your show, he has a fantastic way of talking about Christ loving us through Mary and Joseph in a way that really affirms our role in the Holy Family and our adoption into the Holy Family. And truly loving ourselves and seeing ourselves as beloved in the eyes of our Heavenly Father is our core identity. That's it, man. That's all. That's the core of it. It's not complicated. It's hard to accept, but it's not complicated. And so I want to emphasize that as an alternative to a focus and a hyper fixation on sexual identity.
I think that it's a very important distinction to make, because in light of the feminist movement, I think that the feminist movement led to a chirp of, I can do anything, you can do better. And then it turned into, well, you know, so women can be men, but then women and men can just be anything they want. There's no differences. There's no sexual difference. And so it led to this confusion. But, you know, the church does teach that from the, not just our bodies, but our souls are male or are female. God only creates us male or female. And so as there's this one moment that we need to not overly focus on our sexuality, at the same moment, there's this importance, I think, Michael, of that gratitude and acceptance for who God made us to be as male or as female, and be open to what that looks like and how he calls me to be a woman and how he calls you to be a man. You know, there's individualism that does enter in on a certain level, but then there's also, you know, our sexuality, our faith, all of it, you know, makes up part of who we are. We can't ignore sex, but it's part of our embodiment of who we are. And so I think, like you're saying, there's this obsession with our sexuality, but that can only really be healed and understood through the lens of faith. And I think that you hit on the heart of the problem, is we're living in a society that is separating itself utterly from faith. Tomorrow I'm going to discuss here on Trending a recent study that came out showing that hardly a quarter of 18 to 30-year-olds participate in any type of church service once or twice a month, and that in reality they ditch their faith long before they turned 18. Now, this isn't a crisis of sex. It's not a crisis of gender. It's a crisis of faith, and it's a crisis of the family. And I think that that's so important as we're discussing this. Michael, more questions are coming in. I'd like to take call came in from Laura in Glendale, Arizona. She says, I have an 18-year-old daughter who's struggling with gender identity. Can you give tips on anything that I can do? She thinks she is a male.
Well, the first thing I would say to your listener is she's not alone. This is not an uncommon thing. Again, it is a small percentage of the population, but it is happening more and more, especially with young women. So just take solace in that, first of all. And second of all, there are good mental health professionals available for individuals at the more specific level to do work with your daughter. At 18, she's going to have to approve and identify who she wants to work with. But that would be my first recommendation, is get somebody that you can trust as a counselor and offer to help your daughter get mental health counseling if she's open to it, from a trusted Catholic or sincerely religious Christian individual if possible. With regard to practical interventions for family members, I think it's really good to remember that we love our family not in spite of their weakness, but even more in their weakness, just as we're called to see how God loves us. And we can boast of our weakness all the more because Christ's power is made perfect in our weakness. So you don't have to stop loving your daughter or accepting your daughter. In fact, lean even harder into loving and accepting your daughter and asking the Holy Spirit to guide how that looks. And it may not look like you think it looks. For instance, parents often think they have to have a rigorous debate around gender and sexuality every time they're with that child to make sure they're planting the seeds. That might be very harmful at this point, depending on if your daughter's receptive or not receptive, or open or not open to this kind of conversation. So really go to trusted individuals in your community, like your priest at your local parish. Get resources from local counseling centers. And also remember, loving and accepting a person is not in conflict with your tendency and your call to not approve of everything your daughter does or says.
We'll include a link to therapists as well, from Michael Gasparo, who works with people suffering from same-sex attraction, gender dysphoria, to Catholic therapists and the reintegrative therapy. Excellent resources for any gender dysphoria or same-sex attraction. Michael, as you were talking about that, I know sometimes, especially with young girls, and we talked about this actually yesterday on Trending, I hope, Laura, that you'll listen to my podcast from yesterday's show when we talk about the dangers of TikTok, because we really take a deep dive into how young girls are struggling. And in the book by Dr. Leonard Sachs that we referenced yesterday, Dr. Sachs, my guest, and I were talking about how this actually connects to the gender dysphoria crisis. That's actually his first chapter in his book, that suddenly these girls are struggling with gender dysphoria. Well, what does it have to do with? It has to do with body image. It has to do with social media. It has to do with hormones and chemicals in society today that are messing with the endocrine system. There are a lot of influencers. So I want to highly recommend the book by my guest yesterday, and listen to that podcast. We'll include a link in the podcast notes, and we'll have Patrick post now on my social media at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E on Facebook and Twitter. The book's called A Girls on the Edge. It's an excellent resource, but also Dr. Joseph Nicolosi's book that's a little bit more so geared toward gender dysphoria in young boys. There is a part on lesbianism, but it's called A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality. I think those are two excellent books and resources for parents who are trying to wrap their heads around what's happening. And especially Girls on the Edge has more of a modern perspective on how social media is playing a primary role in this crisis. Michael Gasparo, licensed marriage and family therapist, is here with us. Michael, we had a question come in from an uncle, and I think this is probably the most common experience many people find themselves in today, and that is, how should I deal with finding out my niece identifies as LGBTQ and has a girlfriend?
A really important piece of context comes to mind, Timmerie, for me, which is, what is your relationship like with them already? Mm-hmm. And I think that if at the moment you found out that your niece is struggling, if you've not already been close, then your response is going to be different than if you were very close and intimate in your relationship before. Not that you can't do anything if you weren't close already, but your relationship should already have some context around it that gives you some instincts around what to do or say. I think, you know, I was just thinking off the top of my head, Timmy, something came to mind that I've not thought of before, which is, I want to recommend you ask yourself as an uncle, what would my niece, what would her explanation to a friend be about how she perceives my way of relating to her now? So if after the revelation of this information, your niece were to, let's say, talk to her friend and say, you know, my uncle's really become distant and harsh or unkind or impatient or whatever other fill in negative adjective or verb in the mix, that would be a big issue. And now we don't know what other people are thinking, so I'm not recommending you mind read here, but I would consider that. We want people to think after they've disclosed something very vulnerable and could be a real source of struggle for them, that their instinct is the person treating me now is treating me more kind, more patient, more gentle, with more self-control. The fruits of the Spirit, the characteristics of love that is described by Paul in the New Testament, these are the things that I think would be good ways, measurements, almost a litmus test for how to engage. Now, practically speaking, one simple thing would be go to dinner, go for a walk, just get to know what the person's going through, what it's like for them. You don't have to convert all of their wrong thinking before you just start with engaging in relationship. And I don't mean engaging with the intention to change their mind. I mean engaging with the intention to understand and empathize what they're going through and what this is like for them. Because that is the kind of tender mercy that moves hearts and helps us to grow in relationship in a way that helps us to have a positive influence on a family member that we love.
I think that just following up on those two main points you just made, you know, first coming from that perspective, what sort of relationship do I have to enter into this? And then from there, I think that building a relationship, those are two really important things. I'll never forget Pam Stenzel, incredible chastity speaker and works at the forefront of the crisis pregnancy centers, helping to save babies. She talked about having tough conversations with people. And she said one question that she likes to lead with when she approaches loved ones who are living an adverse lifestyle and she may have a responsibility to speak up. She said, first, you have to know that you have the right to say something. Like, in other words, that you are in that person's life in a way that they know that you love them, and that qualifies you to butt in, essentially. And so what she would do is, you know, with her teenagers, and then as her kids became adults, she'd start when having to approach difficult topics. Do you believe that I love you? And she said, based on their response, should help you understand whether or not you have any right to even say something to them. And I think that that's a helpful means of entering into that conversation, but it's also a reminder, like you said, Michael, of building those relationships. And the reality is that with when gender dysphoria is going on, for girls in particular, it may be that they need more female relationships, but it also may be a broken relationship with a male. Can you speak to the importance a little bit more of even developing positive male relationships and role models? And perhaps this is something that can be done between the uncle and the niece without even bridging necessarily the topic of gender dysphoria?
That's a great question, Timri. And I have a good friend of mine I've been talking a lot recently about this with, and she and I were discussing, you know, I've shared extensively on your show over the years about some of my masculine insecurities and opening up with my struggle with same-sex attraction, which is this ongoing journey I'm on of healing and understanding myself and accepting God's love for me. And I've, in this process, learned that women who have this issue often have a similar challenge, but often a different starting point. Meaning, I have noticed in my life, Timory, that there is a lot of fear that a woman would not be able to relate to me in a way that wasn't manipulative. And a friend of mine who's identified as a lesbian for a long time said she had a very similar fear about men, that she was attracted to men physically and from a sexuality standpoint that wasn't as much of a concern, but she had a lot of fear due to her experiences with her father related to how can I trust a man not to harm me, not to be unkind, not to be engulfing of my who I am and let me be me. So I think you're onto something, that often same-sex sexuality and gender dysphoria have a component, and anecdotally this holds up, but also statistically in a lot of research I've seen, there are strained relationships among women with same-sex attraction with their fathers, and I don't think that it's a coincidence. So I would really think that you're right to emphasize that a kind, nurturing relationship from an older man like an uncle could be a real source of healing. Now, regardless of the outcome of if this girl's feelings change, her identity shifts, you can be confident that engaging lovingly as an adult man with her is going to have a positive impact, or at least in God's eyes it does. We don't know what the world will say, but we know that God loves when people who are older and have a nurturing mentor role invest in their family and their younger family members. That's a beautiful thing. So there's no harm in that, in my mind, as long as you're doing it, trusting God's grace along the way.
Michael, a follow-up question on that. It seems to be that it's far more common for young boys and girls when experiencing same-sex attraction, gender dysphoria, for both males and females, that part of the problem can sometimes be fatherly relationships. If I'm really understanding a lot of the research and data, or even male relationships as a whole, that boys need more male relationships, fatherly influence, that sometimes the mother can keep the son from the father, or sometimes the father's absent, or there's some sort of wound for the daughter, and it could even be sexual abuse. There's a lot we could dive into. How can we work on a simple level preemptively before there's a problem in strengthening fatherly relationships with children in a gender dysphoric culture?
With gender dysphoria among boys in particular, men, and this is traditional psychology from the last 150 years of Western psychological study, that boys have an additional developmental task at around age 2, which is kind of reducing their identification with the opposite sex parent, with their mom, and really identifying solidly with their same sex parent, with their father. Women don't have that exact same developmental task at around age 2 or 3 years old as they're understanding who they are. So it's going to differ slightly between men and women. But from a developmental standpoint, fathers in our culture need to always remember that they are equally as important in their child's development as their mother. And I've seen some temptations in circles of conservative Catholics to emphasize that women are nurturing and men are supposed to be gruff and distant. So especially today, I'm not emphasizing that women and men are the same, but men, fathers, you have an important role to play in instilling a sense of goodness and lovableness in your children that requires affection, approval, and attention from the earliest days, infant onward. So let's try to emphasize that this is not just the mother's role.
A really, really important guideline for rebuilding and fostering these relationships to be preventative with same-sex attraction, gender dysphoria, before it's ever a problem. That's been Michael Gasparo, licensed marriage and family therapist. We'll include a link to his profile at Catholic Therapist if you'd like to see him. He's an excellent therapist. And also other resources will be included on the website for the podcast. But also follow me at Timmery, T-I-M-M-E-R. IE on social media. With all these resources, we posted now on Twitter.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I wanted to answer one more question on this LGBTQ conversation before diving into, hey, news, Elon Musk bought Twitter, taking it over. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, but more importantly, the Megan Fox cover of Glamour in her interview. Whew, that's a lot coming out here. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Shocking and real all at once. It's important to be discussed, but here's the deal. This question came in. If people ask you what your pronouns are, do you think responding she, her, that is if you're a woman, implies that you believe that there could be more than two genders? This is from Antares on Instagram. I think this is a great question. So if someone says, what's your gender, and you don't identify with, you accept your biological reality, are you endorsing this gender craze by saying she, her, whatever your actual proper pronouns are? I think that if someone asks you that question, it's important to say, well, I'm a biological male, or I'm a biological female. Please call me accordingly. I don't think you should have to tell someone to call you she, her. That's absolutely ridiculous. And if someone wants you to put she, her on a name tag, I think we have to reject that. Because it does, I think, support and seem like it's condoning a gender dysphoric and gender identifying, gender queer society. So, you know, I think just emphasizing I identify with my biological reality, you read between the lines and you can choose how sassy you want to be or not with that. Sometimes I think a little sass on these topics, and more importantly, some humor is important, especially in these moments, because yes, there are moments when people are being absolutely ridiculous. We should laugh at them a little bit, respectfully, yes. And, you know, with love within the context of the situation, but again, a little sass and sarcasm is appropriate given some of these contexts that are so ridiculous that we can do it lovingly and respectfully. You're listening to Trending with Timmery here on Relevant Radio. Okay, so Elon Musk buys Twitter. Everyone's talking about it. It is interesting to me that clearly this was something very important to Elon Musk. The Wall Street Journal reported with this $44 billion purchase of the social media company, essentially, it really is making up $21 billion in personal equity from Elon Musk himself. He's working with investors. But what Forbes is estimating this $21 million of personal equity from Elon Musk's makes up 10% of his net worth. Why do I bring this up? Because clearly buying out Twitter was something very important to Musk. And it shows that he's all in with his new vision for Twitter. Now, a lot of people, and I agree, I think he's going to be and has said he will be more accepting and encouraging of free speech. And that's what this whole conversation is about. It's about content moderation. And Elon Musk is going to be the rulemaker when it comes to one of the largest social media platforms out there. He will help make the rules, the guidelines, the filters. And one of the things he's referred to is he's okay with anything as long as it's legal. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think this is a win for free speech. One thing Elon Musk said is he said, "I hope that even my worst critics remain on Twitter." He said in this tweet, because that is what free speech means. Kudos to Musk in that moment that yes, he's not going to censor his worst critics. And hey, there's some positive elements. Elon Musk definitely gets that we're not overpopulated as a nation. He definitely is showing he believes in free speech. These are some good qualities to have in the public space of social media. And I'm hopeful that we might even see some legal battles won and approached more willingly given this open door that I hope will occur for better dialogue on Twitter. But again, it's a reminder, even though you may be more invested in Twitter than you were before and more hopeful, to still have face-to-face conversations along with excellent pro-life, pro-family, and pro-faith-filled and truthful social media content. And I have to say, this is a huge win for the pro-life community that has been so horrifically censored from being able to target and help reach women who are in crisis pregnancy. I've been involved for years with social media marketing campaigns and ads to target girls where they're at, and that is on social media, abortion vulnerable girls. And so my hope is that this will open the door yet again to reach abortion vulnerable girls in our local communities with targeted marketing. So it's a prayer and a hope I have, and it's a reminder to support your local crisis pregnancy centers to help them in reaching young people where they're at on social media. They need funding, they need social media talent, they need marketing talent in order to do that, especially after the last 15 years of censorship that the pro-life community has experienced on social media platforms. So I do believe this is a huge win for the pro-life community, and I'm very hopeful. Okay, a story that I really am just in some way just saddened and grossed out to even talk about. So Megan Fox is the recent April cover for Glamour magazine. There's a 15-minute interview done. She sits down with Glamour's Emily Maddock talking about everything from sexism, feminism, her psychological breakdown, her relationship and engagement with fiancé Machine Gun Kelly. We've talked about Megan Fox quite a bit here on Trending and the messy divorce she went through and then the new relationship with Machine Gun Kelly. Okay, here's what made me listen to the interview, and then I'll share with you a little bit more, but she's talking about, someone said, is it really true that you drink each other's blood? And this is in reference to Machine Gun Kelly or her fiance. Listen to this.
I guess drink each other's blood might mislead people, or like people are imagining us with like goblets and we're like Game of Thrones drinking each other's blood. It's just a few drops. But yes, we do consume each other's blood on occasion for ritual purposes only. It is used for a reason, and it is controlled, where it's like, let's shed a few drops of blood and each drink it. He's much more haphazard and hectic and chaotic, where he's willing to just like cut his chest open with broken glass and be like, take my soul. Let me bleed on you. It doesn't not happen, let me tell you. Maybe not exactly like that, but a version of that has happened many times.
Are you making my face right now? This is real. Megan Fox actually said this, and it's associated written words and in the interview with a new April Glamour cover of Megan Fox. What on earth? This is Hollywood today. And what's sad is that Megan Fox shared a lot about mental breakdown, about getting outside. She talks about how she doesn't do drugs, how she doesn't drink alcohol, how she eats healthy, how she sleeps right. She says a lot of things that are good, but she says a lot of really creepy things about spirituality and rituals such as drinking each other's blood. She literally just told us that her fiance and her slit each other's chests and drink a few drops of their blood for, quote, ritual purposes. We're bordering on and probably entering into Satanism. Let me just be clear here for a minute. This is how creepy this is. So while some people will say, oh, Megan Fox is so beautiful, and I mean, she is known as one of the most beautiful women in the world, this woman, in a very pornographic, might I add, Glamour cover story for Glamour magazine, and even just her outfit she's wearing, this woman, while saying all the right things about health, is physical health, is saying all the wrong things about spiritual health. We are body and soul. You can't get rid of the body. You can't get rid of the soul. And our culture today, after having done away with religion and God for a little while, turned to other types of so-called spirituality. And the reality is that I'm sorry to say, this is turning a lot of people down a path in a search for some higher power, for some ritualistic purpose. It's turning them to Satan. It's turning them to a profoundly deep level of self-worship in areas such as Hinduism and Buddhism. And it's creepy. If you actually sit down and listen to Megan Fox's story, yes, she was one, like many, to call out the sexual perversion before the Me Too movement was a Me Too movement. And we should have respect that back in 2008 and 2009, she was ridiculed but still spoke up, talking about how she felt rejected because she spoke up and said that if a woman comes on to a film set and says she isn't okay with particular scenes, that she's ridiculed or ignored or no longer given rules. But if a man walks onto a film set and wants to change a scene that he's in, people accept and respect that. And that is true. There is sexism going on. There is a rejection of her speaking out, advocating for women. That's a true feminist perspective to have there. But at the same time, Megan Fox contradicts herself, not just in what she wears, but clearly in viewing herself even as a sex icon. But all of this, at the end of the day, comes back to religion. During her interview, and I watched the whole interview with Glamour, she goes on to talk about her relationship with Machine Gun Kelly, and she talks about these spiritual influences, and she talks about him, her fiance Machine Gun Kelly, having a bad spirit over him, and she keeps talking about the importance of needing to feel things. This woman shows us the idealistic attitude of so many, not just young people, but in general, our attitude toward love today. She's in love with the idea of being in love. She had a messy divorce, a scandalous new relationship with Machine Gun Kelly, and then this relationship that is just, it's become something, it's almost as if she's obsessed with it. And it's fascinating because she talks about her children as well in the interview, and she immediately talks about, you know, all this guilt and about being separated from her kids now because, you know, she's divorced from her husband, and she's talking about, you know, not always being able to be around to mother them. And she even says a creepy thing such as, "I cry every new moon about being separated from the kids." And she's not just saying that as acting or as a joke. She's so into this ritualistic, satanic perspective of religion, and it outright may be Satanism itself, or is directing her at least towards self-worship. And isn't that what Satan wants? He wants us to become like gods. He wants us to turn our back on God and worship ourselves. And so as you hear people, especially young people, looking at Megan Fox saying, "Oh my goodness, she is gorgeous, and here she is on the cover of Glamour magazine with this interview," we need to call out the relationship moments. We need to call out the good that she says she doesn't like social media. It's good, not bad, good for people. The people need sleep. People need to not do drugs. People need to not drink. But she's also saying things that are really bad about the soul, the direction of the human person, and therefore ultimately the end of the human person. And that's why we have to talk about it. This is Timmeray from Trending with Timmeray. Gentlemen's Hour is Wednesday. I hope you'll join me. We're taking your questions, any question you have, with a Catholic take, gentlemen. We'll also talk about a recent study showing that only 1 out of 5 20-year-olds go to church maybe 1 to 2 times per month. What does this say about our culture today, and what can we do about it? Also, how Planned Parenthood is reaching kids today. Join me Wednesday, 6 p.m. Central, on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.